of the Philip Morris Company. This is Dick Arendt speaking, and thanking you for the opportunity to present this radio program for your consideration. Inasmuch as we cannot at this time be with you in person, permit me to bring out a few important facts regarding the show. First of all, this transcribed audition is not intended so much as an actual sample broadcast as it is to portray the idea in such a manner that you will clearly see the many great possibilities available in its adoption. We have maintained in this audition as much authenticity as possible. You will actually hear the real San Quentin Prison Orchestra. While the selections played by the orchestra proved too long to be used in their entirety in this audition, yet we still wished to show you the available talent. So we re-recorded the numbers, omitting a portion thereof, in order to keep the show moving. The interview with the warden was read by Warden Clinton Duffy of San Quentin Prison and received his approval before being used in the script. The interviews with the parole candidates also were checked by him. However, as a courtesy to Warden Duffy, we gave the warden a fictitious name for this commercial audition. We did likewise with the governor's name. Now, in the parole candidates' interviews, you will hear two separate and distinct methods for handling same, choice of which depends on how sensational you desire your show to be. Should you prefer institutional treatment, straight interviews will suffice, as in the Court of Human Relations program. On the other hand, gripping excitement can be injected by dramatizing them, as you will hear in the third and final interview. But the most important thing of all is this. Radio sponsors have given the public newscasts, quiz shows, musical shows from symphony to swing, dramatic shows, all types from romance to misery, comedy shows, each trying to out Benny Jack Benny, out Hope Bob Hope, out Fib Fibber McGee and Molly. Production costs skyrocketing higher and higher with each new attempt to outdo competitors. And yet, no sponsor has ever set himself up before the nation as a public benefactor. That is a brand new idea, and that is where we come in with our offering to you. Here is a show with music, orchestras, glee clubs, vocal soloists, with comedy available. Among the thousands of prison inmates through the nation are hundreds of clever comedians, with all the desirable elements of Major Bowes type amateur shows, with drama, not fictional, but true life drama, more powerful and gripping than ever from the lips of the actual persons involved. And as a climax to such an array of entertainment, Philip Morris comes forward with the greatest humanitarian work ever attempted, helping our nation to rehabilitate and restore to society men and women who are ready and deserving of a chance to come back. Risky business, some of you may say. Not a bit. National statistics show that 95% of the paroled men and women become model citizens. We often wonder if the general public can boast of an equal record. And furthermore, Philip Morris would be instrumental in saving huge sums of money for the taxpayers throughout the nation. Over $60 million are spent every year in this country to house and maintain people in prison for crime. You will find verification of these facts and figures in the press book which we shipped with this recording. And here's another point. You will immediately enlist the support of every religious and fraternal organization in the country. You will be endorsed by philanthropic institutions. The government itself will thank you for helping in this noble task. So there you are, gentlemen. A new show that embodies every successful feature used in radio heretofore with an entirely new approach. A terrific emotional appeal. A show that can go on for years because of the endless source of new material. Broadcast from within the walls of prisons. A different prison, a different state, each week. And at a very moderate production cost. We hope you'll like our idea, and we'd like to produce it for Philip Morris. And now, listen.
Here comes Johnny, ladies and gentlemen, in his red coat and brass buttons. Johnny is stepping out of thousands of store windows and counters all over the country to introduce...
A new feature in radio. A public welfare service to the nation. Johnny presents... Ladies and gentlemen, this is Harlan Dunning speaking. We are broadcasting from within the walls of San Quentin Prison, located on the northern shore of San Francisco Bay in California. Through the gates of this prison, a small group of men hope soon to pass, returning to the world they once lost, your world and mine. One fervent prayer is on their lips, a prayer that someone, somewhere in this great land will give them a steady job. Their faith is in your hands, Mr. and Mrs. America, for they have already proven their integrity to the prison authorities, and the State Board has agreed to their parole. But these men cannot get that parole unless a job is waiting for them. And so tonight, the makers of Philip Morris cigarettes are happy and proud to come forward once again and, as a national public welfare service, present these men to you, that you may hear from their own lips their true life story, that you may learn of their rehabilitation and their real character. And we sincerely hope there will be many among you who will find it in your hearts to join in this great work and give these men a steady job and their real chance to come back. It now affords me great pleasure to bring to the microphone the man who has, in the short space of 1 year's time, completely revolutionized the modern-day theories for operation of penal institutions, a man whose plans have done away with prison riots, supplanted hatred with friendship, and changed irony to industry. Warden Clayton T. Donahue of San Quentin Penitentiary. Good evening, Warden.
Thank you, Mr. Dunning, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Warden Donahue, there's been quite a wave of public discussion since this program took to the air. One question in particular has been raised, and that is the advisability of publicizing the fact that a man with a prison record is seeking to place himself again in the ranks of the American public.
I'm very glad you brought that up. In the first place, the majority of people have a very distorted idea of what the word parole convict or ex-convict really means. The mere mention of these words invariably strikes fear and abhorrence in the minds of most people. They visualize some ruthless character whose every thought, waking or sleeping, is to kill, rob, or to otherwise destroy.
Well?
Yes, I know what you're thinking. And there are cases with big shot or gunman complexes. But they represent only a very small percentage of the imprisoned men throughout the country. And don't forget for one single moment that such types will never be allowed on this program. The great majority of convicts are paying for crimes which were simply the result of dictates of a momentarily sick mind. And in many instances, we might all of us well say, but for the grace of God, there stand I.
Well, Warden Donahue, by that do you mean to infer that many of the prisoners who are not really deserving of punishment?
Nothing of the sort. Each man here is definitely in need of discipline, and he gets it. Then, when he's had the fact burned indelibly into his mind that he's no privileged character, that his responsibility to his fellow man is just as great as anyone else's, that man is entitled to return to everyday life.
And the chances are he'll be a better citizen than a lot of us who have never gotten into trouble.
Right. Nobody has to tell him what'll happen if he doesn't respect other people's rights. He knows from personal experience. And that's our purpose, straightening men out and getting them back into useful life. But not until they're ready.
Well, how do you get these men ready, as you put it?
By making available to those who need it and have earned it, educational training. all courses from high school through college. And for those who prefer it, vocational training in practically all fields. And then, of course, recreation plays an important part. All forms of athletics and talent activities. For example, let me present our prison orchestra playing one of the latest popular hits, Say When.
That's really a fine band. Those men played as though their very hearts were in it. Mr. Dunning, they've been looking forward to this broadcast ever since you gave us this date to appear. This is really an occasion.
Well, don't forget, it's an occasion for Philip Morris, too. Philip Morris has enjoyed the privilege of giving Americans a cigarette that is not only the finest for their smoking pleasure, but best for their health. And now we're able to extend our efforts to life itself by restoring deserving men and women to useful citizenship. And that brings us to the most important part of this program. Warden Donahue, as I understand it, there are men eligible to leave San Quentin on parole at this time, provided they can get a job. Is that correct?
It is.
All right, then. Let's get down to cases. We'll interview as many of these men as time permits. Will you please bring the first candidate to the microphone?
With pleasure. Harold Walters.
Yes, sir.
Step forward, please. This chap has served only 3 years and 7 months of his sentence. He's been a model prisoner and really earned his right to parole. Going on a national broadcast is a rather unusual way of trying to get out of prison, isn't it, Harold?
It certainly is, and I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Well, Harold, it's the purpose of our sponsor to help you and the rest of the parole candidates gathered here tonight to find steady employment. Now, will you please describe yourself to the air audience and give a little of your history and qualifications?
Gladly, Mr. Dunning. My name is Harold Andrew Walters. I'm 33 years of age, and I weigh 170 pounds, and I'm 5 feet 10 inches tall.
What education have you had?
Well, I've had 3 years of college.
Have you any relatives?
Yes, sir, a wife and a small son.
I see. Well, where are they?
Well, they're living in Oregon at present.
Well, do they plan to rejoin you when you're released?
Yes, sir. They've been down here to visit me every month.
Well, that's fine. Well, for what offense were you committed?
Embezzlement. I work for a finance company, and, well, I used some of their money to play the stock market on the side.
And it didn't work?
I'll say it didn't.
Well, candidly speaking, that's not too good a background to paint when you're trying to enter someone and giving you a new job.
Mr. Dunning, after what I've been through, disgrace for my family and me, and loss of what little we did have of our own in almost 4 years of imprisonment, well, there isn't enough money in the world to justify it. All I want is another chance. You won't have to worry about me again, ever.
I think you can rely on him, Mr. Dunning.
Well, you certainly ought to know, Warden, if anyone does. Harold, here's a check for $25 you can rely and really call your own. It's a paycheck from Philip Morris for appearing on this broadcast.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dunning.
And there you are, Mr. and Mrs. Public. Harold Andrew Walters stands before you. A high school and college education, a fine record of behavior while paying his penalty in San Quentin, and a family waiting for his release. His hand is outstretched to you, asking for a chance to come back. It is our hope that before this broadcast is finished, some gracious American firms will have telegraphed their offers to give Harold and these other parole candidates a position. No names will be announced. Offers will be held strictly confidential, and all negotiations will be handled by the official parole board. And now then, Warden, before interviewing our next candidate, how about the music?
Fine. The orchestra's all ready, and here is one of the boys to sing Pete the Piper.
When he plays a song, the kids will never fail him. They sing the song along with Pete the Piper. People gather round when they hear the sound of the camels are coming. Hooray, hooray, when their lively feet catch the piper's beat. They start to sway, and then it isn't long till all the folks are dancing. Their hearts are gay when he will play them a song. When he's done all that, they pass the hat for fascinating Pete the Piper Man.
Talent over here, Warden. And now, who's our next parole candidate? Bring him to the microphone, will you?
He's already at the microphone.
He is? Why? Oh, just a moment. You don't mean this chap who just sang.
That's the one. Parole candidate Lester Hawkins.
Well, I am surprised. Lester, with a voice like that, you certainly are a shining example of the well-known bird in a gilded cage.
I guess you're right, Mr. Dunning.
Only this time, the cage hasn't been gilded, has it?
No, sir. And this bird is a little tarnished himself.
I see what you mean. Well, just how bad is that tarnish?
Mr. Dunning, what little there is will soon come off when he's able to rub shoulders with the outside world again.
Well, I'm sure you're right, Warden Donahue. Lester, let's have your story.
Well, I'm 38 years old, about 6 feet tall, and I weigh 180 pounds.
Family?
None now. My mother died just before I was sent here 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. What charge were you convicted on?
Receiving and selling stolen property. I had an auto-wrecking business down south in the city of...
No, excuse me. No specific names or locations, please. We reserve that information only for your next employer.
I see. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. Things were going along pretty fair when a couple of guys started coming in every few days with used parts, accessories, and radios, and selling them to me awfully cheap. I figured there was something funny going on, but the prices I got the stuff for, I was cleaning up. So after a while, I got so I didn't care. Finally, one of them got caught, confessed, and then the police picked up the whole gang.
And you were the fence for the deal.
That's right. The police pulled me in a week later.
Well, what happened to your auto-wrecking business?
Well, after the insurance companies got through reclaiming stolen parts, there just wasn't any business.
Well, when you are released, Lester, it takes capital to operate a wrecking business. Now, you're in no position to manage that.
Mr. Dunning, the mere sight of even a hubcap sends chills up and down my back. I couldn't go into that business again. Those nights of restlessness, wondering whether the cops were coming the next morning, finagling the books to try and cover up and all that. It's not worth it. Money can buy some things, but it can't buy peace of mind when you're doing wrong.
Well, what other kind of work can you do?
Mr. Dunning, I personally recommend him very highly as a physical culture trainer. He's assisted in our athletic program for the past year and has done a fine job of conditioning the men for the various sports.
I'd like very much to go into that work, Mr. Dunning. You know, one of these athletic clubs where they have massage rooms, weightlifting, that sort of thing. I've reconditioned myself, physically as well as mentally, and I'd like to help others.
Hawkins is a good man. He has a fine record and needs outside help now. He has no relatives to try getting him work, and we don't like to hold up paroles for such men.
And without a job, Warden,
A satisfactory one from the standpoint of the parole board. He'll have to stay here for the full term, good behavior or not?
That's correct.
Well, doesn't that tend to sour a man after he's tried to make amends?
It's bound to. Not that he'll necessarily go back to crime, but it does take the heart out of him.
Well, Lester Hawkins, here's your $25 paycheck from Philip Morris for appearing on this program. That should make your heart feel good. And now, here goes the call for work somewhere for Lester Hawkins. Good at physical culture training, but glad to get any kind of honest work approved by the parole board. Mr. and Mrs. America, there's a telegraph office near you. Let's have those wires. And remember, all communications will be kept strictly confidential. And now, Warden, I think would be a good time to hear that quartet we've been telling me about. Ready, boys? Let's go.
Tell me, what's then that Sunday morning, what's then that Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, Sunday morning band. Tell me what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning band. There's one, there's two, there's three little angels, there's four, there's five, there's six little angels, there's seven, there's eight, there's nine little angels, there's ten little angels in the band. Tell me what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, band. There's 11, there's 12, there's 13 little angels, there's 14, 15, 16 little angels, there's 17, 18, 19 little angels, there's 20 little angels in the band. Tell me what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, band. 21, 22, 23 little angels, 24, 25, 26 little angels, 27, 28, 29 little angels, there's 30 little angels in the band. Tell me what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, band. Tell me what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, what band? Sunday morning, band.
Warden Donahue, in our last interview, you mentioned the vocational training Lester Hawkins had received here. I think our listeners would like to know more about this work.
Our next parole candidate will have something to say along that line. George Winters?
Yes, sir?
Please step over here.
Oh, good evening, George.
Good evening, Mr. Dunning.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a fine-looking chap. I'd say about 28 years old, 5 feet 10, and weighed about 160 pounds. How close did I come, George?
Oh, just about right on the height and weight, but I'm only 26, sir.
Why were you sent here?
Manslaughter.
Manslaughter?
Yes, sir. I was one of those wise guys who thought it was smart to get tight. And I kept on until I drank myself out of my job and finally lost my wife and home. And then one night when I was really looking up...
Oh, here you want to leave so early for, George? The party's just in.
Oh, nuts. This is a lousy party. I'm going home. Come on, Joyce. I'll drive you home, too. You'll live down my way.
Well, Georgie, don't you think you'd better leave your heart here and call a taxi?
Oh, me? Say, what are you trying to do? Give me the business? Listen, sweetheart, I can drive better this way than when I'm cold sober. Come on, dude. I'll give you a lift. It's all right. Don't worry.
Hey, you'd better not ride with him, Joyce.
Well,
listen here
I...
now, Bill. You keep out of this, see? You just keep out. I know what I'm doing. Come on, baby. Let's go.
Oh, George, look where you're going. You almost hit that car.
Oh, I did not. You're just imagining things. I just wanted to give you a thrill.
Well, I don't like that kind of thrill. Please keep over on your own side of the street.
All right. There. Now I'm on my own side of the road. Now, is that better? How's about a little kiss, honey?
George, will you stop? Keep both hands on the wheel and look where you're going.
Say, listen here. What are you trying to do? Play hard to get. Come on, warm up, will you, sweetness?
Look out, George. You're going to hit us.
Stand back there, everybody. Let that ambulance through. Over here, Jack. Help me get these two out. No use bothering with the other car. They're both still dead in the mackerel.
George Winters,
rise and face the court.
George Winters, the jury has found you guilty of manslaughter
and I hereby sentence you to the term prescribed by law of 1 to 10 years in San Quentin Penitentiary.
That's it. If you don't mind, Mr. Dunning, I'd rather not talk about it anymore.
Well, I can understand how you feel.
I was a wreck when they sent me up here. None of my family came near me during the trial. I didn't care whether I lived or died.
Yeah?
Finally, after about 6 months, my wife wrote to me. And then she brought my father and mother to visit me. And that's when my whole outlook changed. I made up my mind that with them sticking by me, I'd be man enough to try and amount to something.
Well, what did you do?
I began to study.
Study?
Yes, sir. They gave me my choice of courses, carpentering, machine shop, welding, practically all of the trades, or any business course I wanted.
What did you select?
Public accounting. And it's turned out fine. For the past 2 years, they've had me in the administration office, handling most of the detail work.
And I'd like to assure you he's done an excellent job, Mr. Dunning.
Well, all right, George, here's your $25 paycheck from Philip Morris. You can use it as an opening account in your own books.
I'll be mighty glad to open those books, Mr. Dunning. Thank you very much.
Warden Donahue, I'm afraid time will not permit any more interviews, but here are 5 more checks for $25 each, made out to Thomas Jordan, Sylvan Thompson, James Sullivan, Richard Jennings, and Lawrence Rose, all of whom have equally fine records of rehabilitation and who are with us here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, these men came to prison to pay penalties for crimes against society, crimes which would never have been committed had they been given the proper training in earlier life, a training they now have voluntarily sought and received because they so desperately want to come back, this time as useful American citizens. Warden, I feel the people of this country owe you and your board of prison directors a huge debt of gratitude for the magnificent work you have accomplished here at San Quentin. Tranquility where unrest once reigned. Intelligence where indifference prevailed. You men have worked hard, and to see standing before you such a fine group of parole candidates, salvaged from broken minds and spirits, must make you feel very proud.
Not proud, Mr. Dunning. Grateful. Grateful for the opportunity to extend a helping hand to other human beings who happen to be less fortunate than ourselves.
Beg pardon, sir. A message for Mr. Dunning from the switchboard.
Oh, thank you. Say, Warden Donahue, we've already received 120 telegrams from American firms willing to consider employing these men, and more wires are still pouring in.
That is grand news. We'll have the State Parole Board contact these firms immediately and go into details with them.
Say, this really calls for music. Let's hear from the San Quentin Orchestra once again.
Numbers I've got by the dozens, everyone's uncle and cousin, but I can't live without buzzing. I've got a sweetie I know there, someone who sets me aglow there, gives me the sweetness of love there. We never say, how are you, and seldom say, what's new.
Now, Warden Donahue, on behalf of the makers of Philip Morris cigarettes, I want to thank you for permitting us to present this broadcast from San Quentin Penitentiary, for allowing us to join you and your associates in this noble task of rehabilitation, so vital to the welfare of Americans everywhere. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, comes our call to you for these men who want to come back. A telegram or letter addressed to Warden Donahue of San Quentin Penitentiary, stating your willingness to consider employing one of these parole candidates, will be treated with the utmost privacy, and the State Parole Board will contact you further on the matter.
Mr. Dunning, I've just been handed a wire from the governor. It reads as follows. Warden Clayton Donahue, San Quentin Prison. Permit me to offer my congratulations for the glorious work of rehabilitation you are accomplishing, and for which the radio program I Want to Come Back marks the crowning achievement. Signed, Claude Osborne, Governor, State of California.
This is Harlan Dunning saying good night and returning you now to Nelson Case in our New York studios.
What do you suppose happens when smokers change to Philip Morris? What do they discover? How pleased are they? Well, listen to the findings of a group of distinguished doctors who, in authoritative medical journals, report that when smokers change to Philip Morris, every case of irritation of the nose and throat due to smoking cleared completely or definitely improved. That's what they discovered. Protection added to pleasure even when you inhale. So join Johnny's call for Philip Morris, made by Americans in America to suit American tastes. America's finest popular price cigarette.
I Want to Come Back was prepared for radio and produced by Dick Arndt and Adrian Landis. The persons appearing on this broadcast were the actual parole candidates themselves, and the stories were those of their own true lives. Names were fictionalized and will be revealed only to their new employers in order to further help these men begin life anew. Next week, I Want to Come Back will be broadcast from the federal penitentiary at Atlanta, Georgia. You will hear about the gigantic U.S. defense program, which is being carried on by other men who are waiting for the day when they may return to society as honest, upright citizens.
It's Johnny again, returning now to the thousands of store windows and counters all over the country. Look for me. I'll be waiting for you. Come in and...
Goodbye, Johnny. We'll be hearing you over this same station next week at this same time.
Help your Uncle Sam. 10 cents buys a United States Defense Savings Stamp, 1875 and up, an interest-bearing bond. Johnny presents a Philip Morris program on the air 3 times a week, Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday. For time and station, consult the radio column of your newspaper. This is Nelson Case saying goodnight for Philip Morris.
And this is the Columbia Broadcasting System.